that's breaking right now. Jeffrey Epstein dead in his cell at the Lower Manhattan Correctional Facility operated by the Bureau of Prisons, apparently of a suicide. So as news of this trickles in, we will discuss here on the program. I do have some initial thoughts. I will get to those quickly. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. And I'm always amazed. I have one comment to all the people that are right now indulging in great skepticism over the suicide attempt, because I understand that Epstein is on trial, was awaiting trial, excuse me, for some very serious charges that would have put him away for the rest of his life. I mean, he was, 40, 45 years in prison for a 66-year-old man. That's a death sentence. And granted, right, I understand the point. There are a number of very wealthy, powerful people that risk exposure in the event that this case were to go to trial. The case still will go to trial, and simply put, they didn't add any co-conspirators, but they will. They will charge other people. And chances are, this is, by the way, really bad for his girlfriend, the lady that helped procure all these underage girls for him. I presume that the entire strategy was to pressure her to testify against him in exchange for a deal. Now, that goes away right now, so I think the case, I think it's very likely that they refile some fairly heavy charges against her. But nonetheless, the idea, right, that the idea that federal employees are always competent blows my mind. Look, I get it. In our heads, we imagine that a federal prison, in this case, a federal jail, it's a detention facility mostly for inmates who are waiting for trial. So they're being kept in New York City so they can be easily ferried over to the federal courthouse. The idea, the silly notion that it's federal prison and you know, these are G-men and they've got everything down perfect is absurd. Okay, you haven't been to, I get it, you haven't been to a federal prison, neither have I. Well, I went to Alcatraz, but that's a little bit different. But you've all been to a post office. Wait, it's the same mentality, though. It's a guaranteed job for life. You screw up and what? You can't get fired pretty much. I mean, you really have to mess up to get fired. And that kind of culture, that lack of accountability, creates, I think, an enormous amount of laziness at times, of apathy. And we know that. So the idea of how could this happen? I'm happy to indulge it to the extent that it's humor, but I can explain to you very easily how it can happen. It's the federal government, and if you want to trust these people with your health care, then by all means, please do. But not for me, not today. So Jeff Epstein dead. Oh, I will give you. I'll tell you my other thought on this is how this affects the case and how this affects the victim's claims, because there's two parts. There have always been and will always be two parts to this case. There's a criminal case that is filed by the government against Jeff Epstein and whatever other co-conspirators they will eventually charge. Now, as part of that case, there was an effort in the original filing to obtain some of Jeff Epstein's property, specifically this incredible $80 million townhome mansion, basically, on the Upper East Side in Manhattan. And the concept of this is fairly normal, although, you know, it's typically used in drug offenses, where if a particular piece of property, be it a car, a boat, a home, an office building, whatever, is used in the commission of a crime, it can be seized. And this is a big seizure. You know, I'm sure the feds were getting very excited about taking this home. And it's valued at about $80 million, supposedly, you know, for the purposes when he filled out his bail forms and everything. But I'm guessing, looking at the house and the little I know about Manhattan pricing, I mean, this house could end up going north of $100 million. So big, big prize that the federal prosecutors had their eyes on. And I don't think they can get it. I think it's tough to do because the case cannot continue against the defendant once he's deceased. So it becomes now it really is back to the civil case. This is, in my opinion, great news for all the civil attorneys out there who are representing the victims. And what'll happen is now they just basically have more loot to go after. But the property in Manhattan is the most valuable and the most indestructible of Epstein's assets. I know he's got the island. It's the believe it or not, the townhome in New York is worth more than the island. So the helicopters, the planes, those are all very fungible. They can disappear. They can be damaged. They can, you know, burn in a fire or crash somewhere. But this piece of property in New York, even if it burns to the ground, is still extremely valuable. And when you're a civil attorney, speaking from experience here, you're looking for, if you're going to pursue somebody's estate, you're looking for these type of strong assets that don't have any kind of financing against them, loans against them, liens against them, whatnot. So this basically, in my view, frees up more cash for the victims down the road as these civil cases proceed toward trial. So we'll follow this case. Fascinating stuff. I do love some of the humorous hot takes. Some prankster went on Wikipedia this morning, and what they wrote was, so Wikipedia has an entry for the MCC, the jail where Epstein was being held, where he was able to commit suicide, and the Wikipedia page has notable inmates, former and current, and it lists a number of people, some that you have maybe perhaps heard of. And when you got down to Jeff Epstein's name, the entry there, yeah, somebody edited it to say that it said Jeff Epstein had his inmate number. And then what happened to him, basically, it said killed in prison by the Clintons. I know I died. Can I? You know what? I took a screen grab of it and I put it up on Twitter, and I had some responses where people thought that I did it. No, I did not do this. This is just somebody had done this and thought they were being very funny. So there it goes. We will follow this case as it develops. Now, it has been, of course, a very somber week. And I know I've been eager actually to get back here and talk to you since the shootings in El Paso and in Dayton. And I, of course, am shaken to my core about this because it's awful. And if you are anything like me, we have been out in public this week. And we've been walking around, and we've been in places perhaps where there are more people, be it in a mall or a shopping center or a Costco or a Walmart. And we've looked around and we've wondered, you know, is this the place where it all goes down? And it's sobering. It's awful. And it's not a good feeling. And the randomness of these attacks is really what I think affects our psyche. And when we call it domestic terrorism, I understand there are political connotations behind it. Calling it terrorism, it gives law enforcement certain tools to react, but also it becomes a political football for discussing people who have right wing racist agendas. I get all of that, but terrorism, really the act of creating fear, instilling fear in a population, is real. And we get it and we understand it, and it's affecting us, and it needs to end. Now, my thoughts on this And I thought about this all week, and I am lucky that we do a show really only once a week, unless something really breaking happens. And I resisted the urge to come here to get behind the microphone sooner, because my thoughts on this are quite simple. You know, we have had guns, we've had rifles, we've had pistols, weapons of war in this country forever, since its inception. If you go back to the Civil War, now I understand these were not AK-47s, these were not AR-15 rifles, but we had rifles, and we managed to kill a whole lot of Americans with these rifles. And after the Civil War, a lot of soldiers came home with guns. I don't think people realize this, but basically the war ended and people grabbed their rifle and went home. And in this time period, there were guns everywhere. Every household had guns, and guns continued to be in American homes for the decades and years after. So the question really here is, for me, the one I grapple with, is why all of this carnage now? I still remember where I was when the news of Littleton, Colorado came out or was breaking. And I was young enough, I was still a neighborhood babysitter. And I had a couple of boys that I was babysitting who would have been, I'll tell you, would have been in elementary school age. So young enough to certainly, you would want to very carefully break this type of news to them. And we were out in the park, and I remember one of the dads in the neighborhood came out and said to me, "Oh, there's really terrible news. Don't let the boys, you know, knowing this family, don't let the boys watch TV. You know, you got to check it out first." And gave me a heads up. And that's I remember that day vividly, because in many respects, that's the day where everything changed. Now, Klebold and Harris, if you remember these two a-holes, who were they? Selfish, spoiled, rude, awful, brat human beings. Yes, they were murderers, and on top of all that, but they were spoiled. Their parents, you know, there were some issues at home. They had, you know, and they came. They're a touch younger than me, or maybe around. I think they were a touch younger than me. And they, I remember thinking this at the time and having these discussions with my parents and people a little bit older than me, talking about how this generation, and it started with people my age. You know, I was born in 1980, and it started my age where, well, for one, our parents, my parents' generation, were the generation of you know, post-war free love hippies, right? Where, you know, drugs came on the scene and were mainline, where divorce became an easy thing to do, right? If you've got kids, brand new kids, young kids, doesn't matter. Get divorced. If the marriage isn't good for you, Susie, and if it's not good for you, Tom, well, then do away with it, because your happiness, right? Individual happiness, the husband's happiness, the wife's happiness is what comes first, above family, above the responsibility, the grave responsibility of raising children. And on top of this came a culture, and I don't know if you remember this, but if you're a 1980s baby, you'll remember in school the big push for self-esteem. And everything revolved around how you felt about yourself. And it was warped. I can tell you this, it was warped. And thank goodness. I mean, the only thing, not the only thing, but one thing that saved me as a kid is I have good parents. And when I came home and preached to them about self-esteem and how my teacher told me my self-esteem is really a most important thing, my mom may have said something profane even about self-esteem and told me the most important thing is to be a good person, to work hard, to develop my intelligence, my abilities, and that whatever self-esteem is, that you know what? That's going to follow. Because your goodness as a person and your productivity as a person, that's what brings happiness. It's not happiness that leads other things in life. And it is this culture that has created, in my view, this generation of sick, twisted, me men. And it's mostly men, right? These are, and mostly younger men too. And these absolute disgusting trash human beings, what the common denominator isn't that they're Antifa or that they are white supremacists or that they have, that they play this video game or that video game. The common denominator among them is they want to be noticed. They think they are God's greatest gift to the universe. Their cause matters above human life. It is the me culture. And in many cases, these kids have broken homes, absentee parents. And I'm going to tell you, you can take every gun away from every person in this country, and the problem will persist, and they will use explosives, they'll use knives, they'll mope, they'll run people over with cars, because their anger is real. Their lack of happiness is real. But I place the blame for this at the feet of this modern era movement of the way we have redone completely our approach to parenting. I'm going to talk more about this because this is deathly important. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is a solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Already, the criticisms rolling in just in one short break taken in this program. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network. So, yeah, Sam. You know, this, okay, I get that everybody from the Civil War went home with their guns, but this is not the kind of guns that are being used today. The guns today can shoot multiple bullets, blah, blah, blah. One of the most common, well, not common, but one of the more effective guns in the Civil War was one Henry repeating rifle. It could hold 10 rounds. And that is, by the way, the legal max capacity in California. So in California, the AR-15 that I bought legally in the state, let me see, 2-3 years ago, the maximum bullets I can put in that are 10. We looked this up. Producer Robbie quickly did some research and found that the record for the Henry repeating rifle is 10 shots on target in 1.5 seconds. I'm going to let that sink in. 10 shots on target in 1.5 seconds. That's automatic fire speed. And people did bring those home from the Civil War because soldiers, if they wanted a better weapon, especially, they had to pay for it themselves. And a better weapon meant you had better chances of survival. So people did that. So sure enough, those weapons were not left behind. I can tell you that. It may have been, for many of these people, their most valuable and prized possession. Another statistic, if I may. Out of the 27 deadliest mass shootings, the shooters who committed these atrocities, out of the 27 shooters, 26 of them were fatherless. Now, I hesitate here. I'm only as good in this in explaining things as my life experience permits. And I think we're all similar in this, right? We draw on our life experiences, on our shared kind of knowledge of what we've experienced to make certain determinations. And here I have to get personal. And I also have to perhaps I'll be very careful not to reveal any details here from friends and family, but I will tell you, I had some friends fairly recently who decided to get a divorce, and they've got kids, and the sole reason for the divorce is that one of the two partners were not happy. Now, guess what? I get it. I get why one of the spouses was not happy. Now, the other spouse, the offending spouse, I guess, hadn't done anything egregious, there was a lack of fulfillment. But the kids are quite young. And I struggle with this. I really, really struggle with this because we do not understand how important it is for kids to have a home with two parents. Broken homes that have been destroyed for whatever reason, but especially through divorce, which is perceived by children as abandonment. It's very different from death, right? A child can accept death better than they can a divorce, because the feeling a child has when a mother or a father leaves, that rejection will stay with them forever and leave a hole that I'm not sure can ever properly be repaired. And we are doing this over and over again. And I know in my own instance, there was a time when I was very unhappy, and Sherry and I really were struggling. And I can tell you honestly that what kept us in it were our children. And I will never, ever regret this as long as I live. I recently talked to a friend. And this friend told me that, again, I need to be very circumspect here, but told me that the other partner in the marriage was asking for a divorce. And as I understand it, and I'm not even entirely sure if this is true, so I was just piecing it together from what little I was told, there was some infidelity, apparently. And that was an insurmountable obstacle, even though there was repentance, there was remorse, there was a plea for forgiveness. And I know this may not be popular with a lot of you ladies out there, especially. But I got to tell you, if that's really why you're breaking up a marriage, that's something to think about in the wake of what you are seeing on television. Because no matter what new age psychologist comes around and tells you that you being happy for you is actually good for your kids, and you showing your kids that you've got principles and you're staying in something because you are high and mighty and you've got your standards. I don't know if that's necessarily true. Demonstrating for your children principles of forgiveness, principles of sacrifice, principles of selflessness may be far more important. And those are all the qualities that are absent in these youths committing these heinous crimes. Got a quick break here. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Rogowski, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Let me say this now, as I look at the political reactions to the shootings this past weekend. Trump is caving on this. And he's caving in a way that I think many of us are inclined to cave as well. Because it's an easy give to the shrill cry for action to fix this obvious problem that we have in our country. And I say he's caving because he's signaling now that there may be room for federal action on background checks. And my reaction to this is, well, of course, I mean, and I, who's against a background check? I don't know very many gun owners who mind getting background checked. And if you live in California and have guns, as I do, you get background checked every time you buy a gun. And even if you have a concealed carry permit, you still have to go on a wait list and you still have to get run through a federal database and all this stuff. And even in California now for ammunition. So this is an easy give. But to me, it's a moral capitulation in a sense. Because it avoids talking about what I've been saying here so far this hour. You've got to ask yourself, what is different today than 20 years ago when you could mail order an AR-15? 30 years ago, you could buy any gun online and it would be delivered to you within 2 or 3 days. There was no background check. There were no age restrictions, really. You just sent payment or check the box for COD, and your trusted postal service employee would come in, show up at your house, and deliver whatever weaponry you wanted. So in my view, and perhaps this is a bit of a libertarian part of me, I tend to think whenever there is an added government regulation, I want to know what we're getting in return for it. What's our ROI? What's our return on investment? And the ROI here, folks, is going to be very low. It's going to be low because you're not treating the problem. We're still great with divorce. We're still great with people doing whatever the hell they want. We're still totally fine with legalizing drugs. And I get the argument there, right, about I don't want to get drawn into a drugs conversation, only to say that social attitudes about drug use has changed. And it's a factor because we're in a society now where if you're down, pop a pill. If you're up, pop a pill. If you're a little sad after a breakup, don't feel those emotions. Don't deal with them. Take something for it. And that's the problem. Motherless homes, fatherless homes, that's a problem. And examining how we got here is, I think, far more important than okay, background checks, fine. I'm okay with it. But this is an example of Trump being a standard issue politician. And in my view, and I'm gonna say it right now. I think Trump has really failed this week to capture the high road on this topic and in this time. And Trump had a gaping, wide hole left open to him by all these left-wing idiots who are out there pontificating about racism and bigotry and white supremacy. And he had an opportunity to be the statesman that this country requires. And he just trumped all over it. There's no other way to explain it. He was so concerned about the photo ops at the hospital. And he missed that. What would I have done if I were Trump? And again, this is easier said than done because this is a crazy time and everybody's coming at him for being a racist and a bigot and worse. And we will get to that because my defense of him will be robust. But I'm just telling you something you're not hearing anywhere else. I'll tell you that right now. Because my criticism of him is that he missed an opportunity to stand up in front of the nation and tell you some of the things that I told you and lay it at the feet of liberalism in this country And in our obsession, right, in our obsession to seek our personal happiness and our personal fulfillment and me, what have we got? This. And no amount of gun control, no amount of terrorism task forces being formed by the FBI to root out white supremacy, no amount of police investigating into Antifa will fix this. This change comes from within, and it requires politicians to denounce the cultural disintegration of this country. And of course, they won't, because they're a part of it. I'll be back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
One of the things that really irked me this week, of course, is the general, what would it be? Blind eye, willful avoidance of any meaningful conversations about the Dayton shooter. That story has kind of petered out in favor for a narrative out of El Paso, where the gunman posted an online manifesto targeting Hispanics. And the blame for this was placed solely at the heels of President Trump. Morning Joe on Tuesday morning. This is Scarborough talking with Mika Brzezinski, the MSNBC couple from hell. This is the exchange. And you will see, right, this is a general taste of the type of things that people are saying.
There are a lot of things he can do.
But he won't. And so you have to ask the question, Joe. Isn't it okay to deduce that at this point, this is what he wants? He is inciting hatred, inciting violence, inciting racism. If he doesn't unequivocally call it off and say, this is wrong, and we stand together against this, and we are doing this, this, and this to help fight hate crime. I mean, this is a president who seems to want these things to happen. How else can this be explained?
Yeah, so these things being mass shootings targeting people of color is exactly what this president wants to have happen. On the same channel, Nicole Wallace talking to USA Today columnist Paul Reyes. Here's Reyes and Wallace discussing Trump's views on exterminating Latinos.
Throughout his presidency, he's basically declared open season on Latinos because we are one of his favorite targets. The invasion, the warning people of the caravan, and words like infestation. What do you do with an infestation? With an infestation, the natural the conclusion is to attempt an extermination.
What do you do when certainly the last Republican president fought for, sought, and it's not ideal, but had 44% of
right.
Latino vote. It was so politically powerful inside the last Republican administration. You now have a president, as you said, talking about exterminating
right.
Latinos.
Right. Exterminate a president talking about exterminating Latinos. Now, folks, I'm not even done. Wait, there's a more crazy that we have and we will play as the program unfolds this morning. But I got to tell you, if you're not a Trump fan, stay with me here, because you don't have to like the president to simultaneously know and understand that what is being said here is absolutely insane. When Trump calls, and by the way, infestation was used, rat infested Baltimore. I have heard over and over again those comments taken to mean minorities. Trump is a New York City guy. Last time I was in New York, the hotel where we stayed, we passed this little alley every time we went in and out of the hotel. And for the 3 days that we were there, there was the same freaking rat that was dead on the ground. We just watched it slowly, get worse, and it's just there. It's Manhattan. I was a block away from Central Park. He's a New York guy. He literally means rat infested. This is not code for Hispanics or blacks or whoever. This is absurd. It is an absurd leap. Now, when he talks about an invasion, yes. And I got a question for you. Are citizens of another country crossing a border into another country without authorization? What exactly do you call that? And is it racist if that crossing, if it's done in mass form, call it an invasion? See, it's racist to them because why? Because the people who are crossing the border largely are people of color. But that is just, you can't make it this about race. You cannot make the entire conversation about race. And this shooting that occurred in El Paso, the guy, you know, I read the manifesto when it came out because that's my job. I have to do this and I have to stay informed so that I can come onto this program once a week and make sense. And I read it. The guy's an idiot. And one of the things he does in it, he says he's not a Trump guy. He has strong opinions that Texas is being invaded by Mexicans, and he has a problem with it. And that's not okay. That's not the problem. I don't care if this entire country is made up of people who have heritage coming from Mexico, from Honduras, from Chile, from wherever, south of the border. I'm all for it. I am the son of immigrants. But come here legally, and let's have a legal immigration system that favors people that we want. And by people that we want, again, not a racial term, I mean certain education levels, certain skill sets, based on what our country and our government decides that we need. And the way other countries, I'm just going to tell you the way a lot of European countries function generally is if there is I'll give a concrete example, a nursing shortage. What'll happen is that the health secretary or the minister of health in the country will talk to the State Department and say, hey, we have a nursing shortage. And the immigration office puts out a immigrants wanted sign. If you've got nurse training, if you're in the first year of nursing school, if you have nursing ambitions, if you've done pre-med, please apply. And they take immigrants from all over who are qualified, but it fills a specific need. Our economy's going gangbusters. We need the labor. We'll import labor, but it needs to be done legally. And churning the conversation from a fight against illegal immigration to a synonymous for racism is terrible. And drawing it into this conversation about mass shootings is reprehensible because it is absolutely nothing to do with what occurred. Nothing. And what do I mean by that, by the way? Because I'm going to get challenged on that. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who have strong, nasty opinions, but were raised right by their mothers and fathers, and they're not going to go shoot 22 people in a Walmart. Okay? That's what I'm talking about. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Now, you would think, based on the various responses from the media, from Democrats, even some Republicans, John Kasich, I, John Kasich got a lot of airtime this week on CNN. He is just, what do they call them? Useful idiots. I also think of the term Stockholm Syndrome, where you begin to identify with your captors. That John Kasich, former Republican governor of Ohio and professional tool, was all over CNN talking about gun control because and they brought him. And I get it. He's a Republican that will agree with them on every anti-Trump position and on every left wing position. So they've got him there and he's fulfilling a purpose all week. Talking about the president's unhelpful language, his rude language, his failure to denounce racism and white supremacy. It's an echo chamber. It's all I've heard all week. Here is Trump responding to the shootings on Monday. His words. Listen.
The shooter in El Paso posted a manifesto online consumed by racist hate. In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy. These sinister ideologies must be defeated. Hate has no place in America. Hatred warps the mind, ravages the heart, and devours the soul. We have asked the FBI to identify all further resources they need to investigate and disrupt hate crimes and domestic terrorism.
I literally don't know what anyone else wants from him. It is clear and unequivocal. This language, I would think, if you're making $1 million a year working over at CNN, you understand English. So what happens is this, though, this statement of Trump's is totally drowned out in a sea of babble and nonsense. Frank Figliucci. You got to listen to this. Who is he? Doesn't matter. He's a paid contributor, MSNBC, on the Chris Hayes program. And this is a major show. So it's a daily show, Monday night, a weeknight show. Chris Hayes has this kook ball on his program saying the following.
It's the little things and language and messaging that matters. The president said that we will fly our flags at half mast until August 8th. That's 8-8. Now, I'm not going to imply that he did this deliberately, but I am using it as an example of the ignorance of the adversary that's being demonstrated by the White House. The numbers 8-8 are very significant in neo-Nazi and white supremacy movement. Why? Because the letter H is the eighth letter of the alphabet. And to them, the numbers 8-8 together stand for Heil Hitler. So we're going to be raising the flag back up at dusk on 8-8. No one's thinking about this. No one's giving him the advice, or he's rejecting the advice.
Well, producer Robbie said it best. The only part that Frank got right here is that no one is thinking about this. This is the left's takedown of President Trump's speech on Monday, where he said that his manifesto of the shooter was consumed by racist hate and our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy unequivocally. And what does the news media say? They say, well, you know, president went on to say that they were going to lower the flags until August 8th. And that's 8-8. And since H is the eighth letter in the alphabet, 8-8 means HH for Heil Hitler. And boy, Trump is either getting really bad advice or deliberately ignoring good advice. This is journalism. No wonder you listen to this program. I don't blame you. Only place for sanity, a safe harbor in a crazy world. All right, when we come back, yes, I am going to, yeah, I will get into the race, get into everything going on with the race. And I'll tell you that everybody's in at the state fair right now in Iowa. It's Comedy Central. All these fancy pants libs pretending to be men of the people. And women. There's a couple of ladies out there. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Murjofsky, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, making radio great again. So, I got to tell you, you know Andrew Yang? Well, I think he's the only Asian right now running for president. So, in case you're wondering who it was on the stage, he's a businessman. And I guess his platform is kind of common sense, left meets right. Some kind of, it's kind of vague what his platform is, but he caved. He capitulated yesterday. And what do I mean by this? The 2020 Democratic field has been actively, and I mean not just that, I mean they've been basically baiting and pushing each other in a massive show of groupthink to all collectively denounce Donald Trump as a racist. In the wake of the shootings in El Paso. Now, Yang, by the way, you know who's resisted the urge? Biden. Biden just won't do it. He says, I'm not going to go that far. And that is the smartest thing to do in a crowded field of left-wing nut jobs. You want to be the guy that doesn't go that far. And especially any opportunity to differentiate yourself from the Elizabeth Warrens of the pack is a good thing. But Yang couldn't help himself because he's an nincompoop. And he said basically that on Friday, yesterday, that there was no choice but to call President Donald Trump a white supremacist. Now, when was this? Yesterday, at the same time, these comments emerged right when he was at the fair in Iowa, the state fair. And this is a big deal. You don't know. You if you're a city person, you don't understand the fair thing. I know here in Orange County, we have the Orange County Fair, and it's basically you basically pay a lot of money to risk losing your life on a ride that's been assembled by meth heads. That's what the fair is here in Southern California. My wife is from Utah. In Utah, the state fair is a big deal in I tell you, in agrarian America, in places like Iowa, the state fair is the event of the year. And you've got all the livestock, the animals, you've got rides, amusement. It's a big thing. And since it's an early caucus state, the candidates are exploiting this and have all showed up. Now, imagine you're just an Iowan who wants to go and have a funnel cake. And support your neighbor Mabel and the jam contest that everyone's joined. And there is Andrew Yang, who claims got a picture of himself eating a giant turkey leg. And he says, in a direct quote, "It's my 18th turkey leg. I'm a big fan of Renaissance fairs." You guys, this is you know what a Renaissance fair is? Well, yeah, this is where grown people dress up in period costumes that date back to, say, the 14th, 15th century. So they wear big poofy outfits and watch, maybe participate in jousting competitions. And that's what a Renaissance fair is. So of course, if you're a coastal Democrat, your idea of the fair, and he's there, he's on the ground, he's looking around. His perception of this is that it's a Renaissance fair. He's done. So, the general sense of all of this nonsense is that the left is they are just they are in a madcap dash for the extreme left of the party, and in the process, I think, are losing the voters. They are. And by the way, last weekend, the Democratic Socialists, and this is a strong voice within the Democratic Party, held a convention. They got together to establish a party platform. But don't worry if you think this is a threat to the country. The whole thing fell apart. Here is a clip of just some of the activity on the floor of the convention.
Quick point of personal privilege.
Yes.
First of all, James Jackson, Sacramento, he, him. I just want to say, can we please keep the chatter to a minimum? I'm one of the people who's very, very prone to sensory overload. There's a lot of whispering and chatter going on. It's making it very difficult for me to focus. Thank you.
Thank you, comrade. Is there a speaker against name,
point
chapter, pronoun?
Privilege. Point of personal privilege.
Yes.
Please do not use gendered language to address everyone.
Okay.
Quick point of privilege once again. Hi, James Jackson, Sacramento DSA, he, him. I have already asked people to be mindful of the chatter of their comrades who are sensitive to sensory overload. And that goes double for the heckling and the hissing. It is also triggering to my anxiety. Like, the be comradely isn't just for, like, you know, let's keep things civil or whatever. It's so that people aren't going to get triggered so that it doesn't affect their performance as a delegate.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your Democratic Party. This is Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders. You don't think I'm being real? Bernie Sanders, 4 years ago, were it not for Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the other stooges of Hillary Clinton in the Democratic Party, Sanders would have become the nominee. And I don't think it's any stretch of my imagination. Back then, with the energy behind him, with Trump being crippled by a number of gaffes and problems, I get just the want for an outsider. Bernie could have become president. But the more that they go this kooky extreme, the worse it gets for them. And I don't, you know, okay, I get that the turkey leg business at the Renaissance Fair, Andrew Yang, Mr. Yang has how many? What's his support? I have it here somewhere. What I'm missing is a magnifying glass, so I probably couldn't tell you exactly what it is. But the point is that everybody is falling over themselves to take and stake these outrageous extreme positions. And this race may turn into one where Trump doesn't win it. It's just that the Democrats lose it. And you understand the difference. If they ever get to a point, let's say with a faltering economy, it's going to be their race to lose. And even in a good economy, they still have to make a pitch that they are reasonably normal. Now, occasionally, reason does emanate from the left. And Bill Maher on his HBO show actually spoke words of truth that every Democrat ought to put in their minds. So listen, this is his take on the election. With all this going on, the Democrats at the state fair, the Democratic Socialists, Bernie Sanders, and everyone racing to condemn Trump as a white supremacist. This is what Bill Maher says.
The voters that Democrats need to win, moderates who have Trump fatigue, will vote against the good economy, I think, just to get back to normalcy. But they won't trade it away for left-wing extremism. We should run on, elect me, and we can stop talking about him. All the Democrats have to do to win is to come off less crazy than Trump. And of course, they're blowing it. Coming across as unserious people who are going to take away all your money so migrants from Honduras can go to college for free and get a major in America sucks.
Yes, the Democratic Party is the party of unserious people who are coming to the who are coming to take our money away. What does he say? Going to take all your money away so migrants from Honduras can go to college for free and get a major in America sucks. This is gospel truth. Now, the problem, I'll point out, if I may, is that Maher also on his program, and he himself, I think he lacks a little bit of self-reflection here, because on his own program, he takes positions that I think are unserious when it comes to Trump. And I understand he's got a show that is about entertainment and panders to a certain crowd. But in that pandering, I think, is an admission that within the left and the Democratic Party, they're not really interested in the truth about Trump, but they're interested in various slogans and conclusions. Trump is a racist. Trump's a bigot. Trump, yo, he's a white supremacist. Yeah, yeah. And the more of that that is out there, crazy begets crazy. It feeds itself and it becomes self-perpetuating. And what are the candidates going to do? They're going to react. They're going to pander for votes the same way that Bill Maher panders for ratings. And I think that's the part of it that's lost in the analysis of all of this. And so I think again, if any crystal ball is to be used, looking forward and looking at how this all plays out, the Democratic Party isn't going to moderate. And Biden is the moderate candidate with the most amount of support, and it's not looking good for him. I'll give you an example of that when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogofsky, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem, and Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Later in that monologue, Bill Maher described Biden as non-dairy creamer. No one likes it, but it'll get the job done in a pinch. So, well, it's just I bring it up because I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a leftist. And there are certain people on the left that I think are interesting to hear from and get their opinions. Because we must get into the minds of the enemy in order to understand where the battle and war ends up. So Biden on Thursday once again stepped in dog do, proverbially speaking, when he said this about the great aspirations of poor kids.
We should challenge students in these schools to have advanced placement programs in these schools. We have this notion that somehow if you're poor, you cannot do it. Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids, wealthy kids, black kids, Asian kids. No, I really mean it, but think how we think about it.
So poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids. And then there's this slow applause where... And he corrects himself. Well, I mean, wealthy kids, black kids, Asian kids. I really mean it. Close quotes. How is this relevant? It's relevant because you need a tremendous amount of energy to get this thing across the finish line. A presidential race, forget the primaries. The primaries are a joke, but they require energy too. The general election, meaning from July, let's say, of 2020 to November of 2020, it's like running a marathon. It does, and to win it, not just, you know, I ran the marathon, yay, because that's the Hillary Clinton way of participating in an election. But no, to win it. Do you remember why, in part, why Trump won? The incredible amount of human energy that the guy had. He was in three or four different states. For the most part, he stuck to the message. He just was up in the morning. He was at a late night. I mean, he would meet thousands of people a day. And to me, these little misspeaks and just moments where he looks tired and out of it makes me think that Biden just doesn't have what it will take to get this thing done. And if I'm perceiving it, I think other voters are perceiving it. And it's too bad because for the Democrats, it's too bad because Biden's the most palatable of the candidates. This morning I was watching an interview with the Hickenlooper. You probably don't even know who he is, from Colorado, former governor of Colorado. And he is running. He's one of the people that's running for president. For the nomination on the Democratic side. And they got him to admit, and by the way, this is politics 101. You should never acknowledge other candidates in the race except to explain why you're better than them. But he basically said, you know, I've talked to a lot of voters and I'm their next choice. You know, they tell me, I'm a Biden fan, but if it's not Biden, then I'm definitely going to vote for you. And he said that on Fox and Friends this morning, or maybe Neil Cavuto. But nonetheless, terrible thing to say. And an admission that really, after Biden, the next more palatable thing is a guy with about as much personality as a rock. I mean, if you had a pet rock as a kid, if you drew an expressive face on the rock would fare better in a debate than John Hickenlooper. So I don't know. It's, if I were a Democrat right now, and just keep trashing Trump, keep calling Trump a racist, keep staking absurd positions, keep telling everyone how you're for illegal immigration, that you think illegal immigration is a good thing. And we'll see if that works for you. I don't think it will. It is not enough to get you across the line. And there's nobody over there with any kind of charisma. Not yet, at least. Sam Rogowski, back after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Rogowski, Sam Nation. Yes, do you know there was a college athlete, a football player, that was arrested after police mistakenly thought he had cocaine on the hood of his car? Turned out it was bird poop. Savannah, Georgia, drug charge has been dropped against a Georgia Southern quarterback after a white substance he identified as bird poop on his car's hood tested negative for cocaine. You know, this is why you should never believe initial charges, and why I will tell you, even in this Epstein case, I am very suspicious of all the statements that are coming out from the victims in the case, because it's not that I don't believe the victims. It's just, I don't believe anything until it's been proven in court, until the rules of evidence have been applied to it, until there's been, you know, some sort of vetting of that evidence. And by, of course, Georgia cops arrest a guy for having bird poop on his hood. I love the story. I just absolutely love the story. This is why when anybody asks you, do we need lawyers in this world? Yes, we need lawyers, because sometimes we have this kind of law enforcement stuff going on. All right. I know I should have gotten to this earlier. I'm gonna talk about it now. I gotta play this clip because it is heart-wrenching. But I have to tell you, this week, by the way, this week after the shootings, the mainstream media has really, really pushed this narrative that if you're even associated with Trump, if you're even a Trump supporter, then by association, right, you yourself are a racist. And in so doing, they called me and they called you and a lot of other good people racists. Now, I take personal offense to it. I'm not a racist. This is just absolutely insane talk. But I do think I do think that it needs to be talked about, especially as the debate on immigration heats up moving into this election. Now, one of the clips that got passed around everywhere was a heart-wrenching video of a young girl whose father had been arrested in a raid at a factory, I believe, in Indiana. And I have a short clip of this just in case you haven't seen it. The clip is more, I think, more persuasive and emotional if you look at this little girl, because, of course, who doesn't feel terrible for a child who is missing her father? I'm just going to play a quick part of the clip. Listen to this.
No, the Hispanic people are not doing nothing bad. They're not stealing nothing. The immigrants just went just inside the company, just get our dads out of there. That's not fair, immigrants. Yeah, just see what I'm doing. I'm crying because of my dad. I have a lot of heart about that. A lot of children are crying.
It's terrible. It's heart-wrenching. I'm a dad, and I've got a daughter about her age. I have to tell you, though, if I am arrested by, let's say, the government for cheating on my taxes, and I am taken away to jail, will my kids cry? I hope so. I hope they will. I hope they'll miss me, right? I don't want my kids to cry, but I hope they miss me. I hope they love me that much that they would miss me. Of course my kids would cry. Your kids would cry. All of our kids would cry if we were taken away and arrested for suspicion of having bird poop on the hood of our car. No, I'm exaggerating. For any suspicion of violating any crime. I cannot tell you how incensed I am by this video being used by the left to call opponents of illegal immigration racists and heartless thugs. If you don't like Democrats, if you don't like this video, then go to Congress and change the law. All you Republicans out there who want to be compassionate conservatives and trash talk Trump, change the law. Fix it. Make it legal for people to cross the border without any prior documentation. We are such hypocrites in this country, not racists, hypocrites. All of us, Republicans, Democrats. And the reason is that our elected officials, if they change the law to reflect the political reality on the ground, which is that people are, I guess, free to come into this country, and God forbid they get arrested, because if they get arrested, their crying children will be thrown all over the evening news and used to shame evil, whatever evil administration is enforcing the current law, right? If we actually passed a law that said any amount of immigration is legal, is fine, is okay, wouldn't the natural consequence of that be, I mean, people would be outraged. The voters would be outraged. People would get thrown out of office for passing a law like that. That's why they don't pass it, because they know it's political death, because they know that people don't want that. And yet this week, if you were listening to CNN, MSNBC, reading the New York Times, the Washington Post, or whatever leftist publication, channel, broadcaster, you would think that Trump is out. He's done. He's never going to win any election because he is a bigot, because he is putting this little girl's dad in jail. And yet there are hundreds of members of Congress who are living proof that the national mood does not stand with the libs on this one. I believe that the world, the political world, is filled with contradictions. And the contradiction that is most important when it comes to 2020 is this one. And listen to this carefully. You can have people be against putting this girl's father in jail, be against children in cages in a poll that's taken. And at the same time, come November, vote for the candidate that will stop illegal immigration, aka Trump. And the reason for it is twofold. One, people compartmentalize things. They can very easily say, I don't want to put kids in cages, but I don't like illegal immigration. Okay. And you can even make an argument for how those two maybe are not mutually exclusive. But on the other hand, people also feel very strongly and just about legal immigration being the proper course of action. And so if they're asked a question about, do you support legal immigration? I bet you way more than half of the country is going to say absolutely yes. But if the question is framed differently, do you believe in child separation? Do you believe in, putting people in cages? Who says yes to that? I mean, who would even want to admit that to a stranger on the phone asking them a question? No one. Because, of course, we don't like that. Who likes that? Nobody likes that. Nobody doesn't feel awful for this little girl. And that is where we need to be careful with how we perceive this election cycle. Because the polling is going to get a lot of things wrong. And as long as the polling stays solid, and I would say solid being, 60% or more of people affirmatively liking legal immigration, then Trump should run on this platform until the Democrats are literally passing out calling him a racist. Because this is the issue to stand strong on. I have my own personal experiences here with many people I've talked to back this up. And I promise you we'll talk more about the subject as it unfolds. All right. It's been a wonderful program. I know we will get to more. We will get more on Friday or Saturday next time we have the program again. It's been a joy. Have a wonderful weekend. God bless you all. Stay strong and stay safe. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, over and out.